If the Senate would please come to order. Roll call.
Roll call for Friday, February 27th. Anderson, District 2.
Here.
Anderson, District 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstetter.
Here.
Driscoll. Emmerich,
here.
Escobel,
here.
Geis,
here.
Hastert,
here.
Hicks,
here.
Johnson,
here.
Kinski,
here.
Landon,
oh, so you get to excuse him.
Meyer,
excused.
Pappas,
conference committee.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Scott,
here.
Von Fladern,
here.
Wasserberger,
here.
President Nicholas.
Here.
I don't know if that bell is.
28 present, 2 excused.
Let's see, the prayer this morning is going to be led by the Most Reverend Highness Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much. Billy Minder, who was supposed to pray this morning, is actually in the hospital with blood clots in his lungs. He says he thinks he'll be okay, but won't be leading us in prayer. So I would like first if we might pray for strength and healing. If you would pray with me, Holy Father, the strength of the weak and the comfort of those who suffer, grant to your faithful servant Billy and all those who suffer in body, mind, or spirit, the help of your healing power, that sickness may be turned into health and sorrow into joy. And Holy God, the fountain of wisdom, whose will is good and gracious, grant us in all our doubts and uncertainties the grace to ask what you would have us do, that in your light we may see light. May our hearts feel the song of the meadowlark, our minds the clearness of the mountain air, and our souls the freedom of the soaring eagle. Give us eyes to see clearly, ears to discern truth from error, minds to understand, voices to speak with courage and conviction, and hearts filled with compassion, as we move forward united in our journey of service. And may the peace of God, which passes all understanding, come among us and remain with us this day and forevermore. Amen.
Please join me in the pledge. I pledge
allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Play ball!
Play ball! Ooh, nice catch. That was a good one.
Senator Kraft, that was a wonderful prayer, and I think you ought to give that transcript to Representative Peterson just in case we ever have to call on him again. It'll load him up with some really nice things to say. The first item is approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February the 26th, 2015, had been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jeff Wasserberger, chairman.
You've heard the motion. Are there any objections? All those in favor, I don't have to do that. If there's no objections, the report is adopted. That way we don't get into challenges. See, we're at new businesses, introductions. Let's see, the doctor of the day is Dr. Joe McGinley from Casper. Welcome.
Welcome.
Everybody give him a welcome. Well, let's introduce them. Well, I'll give you Kale's doctor if you'd introduce us to your family members. We'd be delighted to meet them.
Thanks for the introduction. I have my son Charlie here today, 5 years old. He loves coming down and listening to the discussions and the bills. And my wife Diane also accompanied me today for the day, and we'll be down here all day watching some from above and some down here below.
Well, welcome. We're glad to have you. Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I could take the Senate's time for just a moment to introduce a person that's special to me.
You may.
About 3 decades ago, found a wonderful young lady from Seattle, Washington. Finished up our school, and I said, why don't we get married? And she agreed. She agreed at that time, but if had I given her the big picture and said, I think we're going to move up into a high Wyoming valley where there's only about 60 frost-free days, we're going to run a country newspaper, get involved in everybody's life, and if that's not enough, we're going to get involved in politics. She may have said no at that time, but she's still with me. 33 years later, we're celebrating our anniversary. I'd like you to meet my wife, Kim Dockstader, up in the gallery.
And Senator Esquivel.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. President.
You may have it.
Mr. President, as the body knows, we've covered quite a few topics during this session regarding health issues. Sometimes we've been on one side of the fence, sometimes on the other. But now we have a chance to be on the same page in the same race. I want to remind you about the race for the cure. So if,
I'm glad you clarified that.
Right. We can all be on the same race. So I've got an application on your desk somewhere, so if you wouldn't mind filling that out, and I'll make sure that it gets to the proper individuals, and appreciate your cooperation. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. And our nurse of the day is Julia Banke. I hope I said that right. If you'd please stand, and she's from Weston County Health Services. If you give her a warm welcome. Today in history, 1965. Geez, we're getting back to Eli. Flynn Robinson became the University of Wyoming's men's basketball leading scorer. Session to status. Today is day 32. Of the proposed 37-day session. The last day for bills reported out of committee is now. Today, fellow senators joining us this morning to provide some Wyoming entertainment is Echo Roy Klaproth, the state's poet laureate, who was appointed by Governor Meade in July of 2013. Echo is a fourth-generation Wyoming rancher who hails from Choconee. She is also a writer, retired teacher, and ordained minister. Please help us by welcoming Poets Laureate Echo Roy Klaproth.
Thank you.
I hope I said your name correctly.
Echo Klaproth. Yes, sir.
Good. Thank you.
Welcome. Perfect. Thank you so much. It has been an honor for me. Well, and before I even say that, I want to applaud you all. We still are. Wyoming still is a state working under one God. Thank you so much for opening with a prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance. It's not happening everywhere else in our nation, as you all well know. So I applaud you all for continuing those sacred traditions. It's been an honor for me to serve. I've been blessed to travel statewide
I've worked with people of all ages, from senior citizen centers to service organizations, writing groups and conferences, but my favorite has been spent with students in the schools. I'm a former teacher, and my heart still is a teacher. Last year on opening day, I gave you a poem that I'd written specifically for you. This one today, as you're getting ready, are any of you tired? I thought so, and so I'm hoping. I'm going to ask you to do this. This is something I used to do with my students when they were particularly tired or had just come in from recess or outdoors. So I'm going to ask you to take a visualization with me. Are you all game for this? So I want you to lean back in your chair, and if you are so inclined, you may close your eyes. We're going to have just a couple of minutes here. If any of you doze off, we'll wake you up. I want you to travel Wyoming with me for a minute through a poem. I titled it, The View from Here. I am the sun radiating, God resonating from shades of denim, the expanse of blue, washed often with a rainbow of colors, an early morning cast or late afternoon hue. I am high mountain air, swirling shapes of mist, and the wind blowing biting through the times, as aspen and cottonwood endure the seasons, lean with the wind-hewn cedar, elm, and pines. I am snowbanks clinging to mountain walls, slicing their way through the land in their thaws, surrendering their fate as creeks into rivers, slithering to the sea down ravines and draws. I am the miles and miles from here to there, woven across the view from lofty rims, a laurel of sage amidst prairie grasses, patterned with pronghorn and signs of men. I am swaths of alfalfa and fields of grain, red-walled canyons, grasslands and dunes, ancient petroglyphs and open pit mines, littered with fences and roadways festoon. I am immensity and propensity, a last frontier story held in measure, mostly by the wealth of reserves stored below those pockets of mammon held as treasure, still all the while sitting out in plain view stands that grandness transcendent and sublime, where immeasurable is the value of living without obstruction on the edge of time. Thank you guys, folks, not just guys, thank you folks so much for all that you do for us and to keep Wyoming as strong as she is. Thank you so much. God bless you all.
Thank you. Echo, thank you for joining us today to remind us of the importance of the arts in our culture. We appreciate your taking the time to be with us today. Thank you very much. Senator Bebout.
Before
you may.
I want to personally thank Echo for coming and bringing her husband along, who got her through the weather and everything, to come down here. And I want everybody in the body to know that Shoshone is making a real effort on the arts side. And we have people like her serving us and serving our state, so I'm very proud of what she's done for Wyoming and for what she's done for Shoshone. And when all of you go through Shoshone, now you have another reason to take the affirmative position, which is like this, members of the Senate. Hand over your heart for Shoshone. Thanks, Echo, for coming.
Thank you. We have messages from the House.
I stop there every time. I'm going to ask the doctor what he thinks of my report.
February the 26th, 2015, from the House of Representatives. Message number 415, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, House appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 180. The House conferees are Representative Crone, Chairman, Representative Helverson, and Schwartz. From the House of Representatives, message number 416, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee Amendment, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the House appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 11. The House conferees are Representative Northrup, Chairman, Representatives Burkhart and Freeman. From the House of Representatives, message number 413. Conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the House appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 214. The House conferees are Representative Brown, Chairman, Representative Steinmetz and Stubson, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
You don't want these back. Hey, Mara, take those with you.
We have some Joint Conference Committee reports.
I'm going to live, he said.
First one is on House Bill 17. Senator Hastert, are you ready on that report? If Reedy Clerk would please read in the Joint Conference Report on House Bill 17.
Joint Conference Committee Report, House Bill number 17, Sexual Assault Protection Orders, Reference Senate Message number 257. Signing for the House, Representative Miller, Conley, and Geer. Signing for the Senate, Senators Hastert, Perkins, and Ross.
Mr. President,
members of the Senate, I move Joint Conference Committee number 1 to House Bill 17 and ask you to vote aye. This was a fair compromise, and I was going to turn it over to the broker of the deal, Senator Perkins.
Senator Perkins,
thank you, Mr. President, has it been moved?
It has been moved.
It has been. Okay. Thank you, members of the Senate. What we did on this is we went down and we had long talks and extensive negotiations, and ultimately what we did is we reached a compromise. We took the bill and we reworded a little bit. We broke it out. We're treating now stalking orders and sexual assault protection orders a little bit differently. We're leaving the, if you look what we did is we took the Section B and we broke it out. So we have Romanet 1 on the conference report. Conduct constituting stalking order, the protection order shall not exceed 1 year. That's the way it is in existing statute. Everybody agreed that we'd leave that one alone. For conduct constituting sexual assault, the order of protection shall not exceed the longer of, and this is where the compromise was, 6 months. Senate version was a year. They had 3 months for being charged, and ultimately we agreed that we would leave the 6 months for the original order. And also then we also looked and said that if there is a charge, that it will and the order for the release of the person while their pretrial release is at least as stringent as a protective order, then the protective order would go away and they'll be constrained by the order associated with the criminal side of this whole issue. The other side of the compromise is that then any subsequent orders, whether they're stalking orders or sexual assault orders, can be extended for at least 1 year on a repetitive basis if necessary. And with that, it was a good compromise. It does what the bill's intended to do, and would ask for your favorable consideration to vote aye.
Questions or discussions on the conference committee report? The motion is the Senate do adopt the Joint Conference Committee report, which is part of Senate message number 257. and relates to House Bill 17, Sexual Assault Protection Orders. And you've been asked to vote aye. The chief clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson, District 2. Anderson, District 28. Aye. Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
Wasserberger.
Aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 29 aye, 1 no.
By your vote, you have adopted the Joint Conference Committee report identified as state Senate message number 257, referencing House Bill 17, Sexual Assault Protection Orders. The next item relates to Senate message 275, House Bill 154. Senator Meyer, are you ready? Would the reading clerk please read in the report?
Joint Conference Committee Report, House Bill 154, Complementary Hunting Licenses Persons with Disabilities, reference Senate Message Number 275. Signing for the House, Representatives Kirkbride, Allen, and Kasparik. Signing for the Senate, Senators Meyer, Hicks, and Von Platern.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, I move the Joint Conference Committee Report, Message 275, to House Bill 154, and ask that the Senate vote aye. If you recall, as it left the House, we had the Hicks Amendment on it that took it down to a doe fawn and restricted it to certain areas that were undersubscribed. We had a good conference with the House. They kind of told us their side of the story as far as the folks that are using these licenses. They've already got some land lined up, and so the restrictive area wouldn't hurt. Senator Hicks put forth his concerns that these guys had to have a little skin in the game, and offered this amendment, which essentially says that they can hunt about anywhere, but they have to pay the cost equal to a resident antelope license fee specified under here, and that's an adult buck. So these guys are going to have some skin in the game, which is what the Senate wanted to do, and the House wanted to be able to allow these hunts to go on where there's already access to land. And so with that, Mr. President, I would ask for an aye vote on this report.
Any discussion or questions on the report? The motion is the Senate do adopt the Joint Conference Committee report, message number 275, referencing House Bill 154, Complementary Hunting Licenses Persons with Disabilities. Will the chief clerk please call the roll? And you've been asked to vote aye.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout. Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter. Driscoll,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Escobel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Kinski,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Pappas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Platern,
aye.
Wasserberger,
aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30-aye.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee report to message number 275, referencing House Bill 154. Reports from standing committees.
February the 27th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 109, engrossed, felony unlawful possession of controlled substances, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senator Escobel, Kinski, Von Fladeren, no, Senators Christensen and Hicks, Senator Christensen, Chairman. February the 27th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 215, Community Juvenile Service Board's creation, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, Kinski, Von Fladeren, Senator Christensen, Chairman. February the 27th, 2015, Mr. President, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 243, engrossed, child abuse, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, Kinski, Von Fladeren, Senator Christensen, Chairman.
Folks, if I'd like to take this opportunity to recognize Marissa Davila. Marissa's last day with us, and then, oh man, and next week she has to go back to school. And but we have a resolution recognizing Marissa for her services to us these past 2 weeks. She's been a great page, and I hope she knows that she has to talk to us now. So, Marissa, you get the microphone over here, and we'd like to give you this resolution. And we also have a coin to remember us by, and we've sure appreciated your service to us. There you go. Well, thank you very much. Why don't you go ahead and take the microphone and tell us how hard it's been to be with us.
Well, these last 2 weeks, I've definitely learned a lot on passing out hundreds of bills and amendments and how long it takes for you guys to come to a decision. But in the end, it's you guys come up with the right choices on what's right for Wyoming and what will improve our state. And I can't thank you guys enough for giving me this opportunity to come and experience it firsthand. And I will definitely not forget this experience that I've had.
Hey. Marissa, we all know what you say. I mean, a lot of times we say, "You really? We were there an hour ago." We're at that order of business of bills on second reading. House Bill 81, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 81, Wyoming Lottery Distributions.
There are no amendments or discussion. House Bill 81 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 108, Trespass Landowner Liability. There are amendments.
House Bill number 108, Trespass Landowner Liability.
Sure, if you come up here, I'll We do have amendments. If the reading clerk would please read in the first amendment.
House Bill 108, second reading, amendment number 1, corrected copy, page 3, line 2.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 108. Folks, what this does is it's an attempt to clarify that the law with respect to trespassers does include a couple areas of existing Wyoming law. This does not change the law. What in the first draft you have is the exception that was put together was for attractive nuisances as it deals with children. We know about that exception, and we've talked about it. But there are other exceptions in existing Wyoming law, and they're also embodied in the restatement second of torts, and they're represented here. And one of the best examples, and the one I kind of love, was harken back to the story about rattlesnakes. And the way it is if you're walking through, trespassing through a field, and there's a rattlesnake there and you get bit, that's a risk you take. There's no liability there because that's not an artificial condition. But, suppose you have I like the rattlesnake example because I grew up in a place where we had lots of those rattlesnakes, and if you went in and cleaned out a den, and had 100 snakes, you put them in a gunny sack, and you go put them up on top of a platform that you put, just thinking, I'll just put them out there, and then you see a trespasser walk by, the duty's different, because you created an artificial condition. And if you have a notice of an artificial condition that somebody walking by, and you see the trespasser, you have an obligation to say, by the way, you need to stop there because I've thrown a bunch of rattlesnakes up on top there and you can't see them, but I know about them and I created that risk. And that's an existing exception that's always been in the law of Wyoming. And, the other issue is when you see somebody trespassing and you happen to know that there is a potential for a high risk of injury, death or serious bodily injury. And you recall this is the one, for example, where you may have property, you know that people are trespassing through it, and there may be an awning. And what you know that no one else knows is that that awning is about ready to collapse because you've been up there and you've seen that the timbers are rotting, and you just haven't gotten around to taking care of it. And it's about ready to fall, you see it sort of shaking, and then you see a trespasser. At that point, because the trespasser is unlikely to know that harm, and you know that there's a high risk of death or bodily injury, you do have a duty to the trespasser to say, stop, you need to walk around that if you see them and you're there. So these are exemptions that are already embodied in current law, and it makes the statute that we're about ready to pass a more comprehensive codification of existing Wyoming law. It continues to protect us from a movement to the Restatement 3, which is a different set of law, and we're not proposing to change anything that's not already in law. With that, I'd urge your support of the amendment.
Okay, thank you. Hang on 1 second. We're waiting for
the reboot.
We're waiting for a reboot. There we go. Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question on rattlesnakes. Let's say that you and Joe got those 100 rattlesnakes and you just stuck them up on top of that platform. And Joe, he's not too quick and he just got bit in the leg and you're taking Joe to the emergency room so he can get some anti-venom. And you notice in your rear view mirror that there's a trespasser walking toward that platform. Where does your duty lie then?
Anybody, any other questions? Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. President, let me give you an example that is part real and part hypothetical, because I think it may illustrate what's wrong with this amendment. I stopped a few years ago a couple trespassers who were driving down my ranch road, having come in from the stock trail, and inquired and discovered, A, they were hunting, and B, they didn't have permission. And we do give permission widely, but these guys had just come in and they didn't have permission and they were drunk. And I maintain an irrigation canal, significant one, had a bridge over it with no side rails on it or anything. Perfectly safe if you're sober. But I told those guys to get out, to depart. I didn't warn them about the bridge or anything. It didn't occur to me. I just wanted them out of there because they were dangerous. If they had driven off that bridge and drowned themselves in the ditch, was I going to be liable with this? Because it was a dangerous condition, all right. They didn't know about it. They'd come in the other way. And being drunk, they might well have driven off the bridge and drowned themselves. I think that's the kind of situation this amendment lets us into. I think it is an expansion in the existing Wyoming law. And I would urge us to oppose that. I would add a postscript to that. I called the Game and Fish because there were drunk hunters around. And they went looking. But they didn't find them, and it turned out the reason they didn't find them is they had reverted to their native habitat of the Goose Egg Bar to have another one. So they got clear to town after that without getting caught.
Thank you, Senator Anderson.
Thank you. In a past life, I used to run a sawmill. And I'd buy logs, and they'd bring them in by the truckloads. Short logs, they'd stack pretty high as that clock, in a pretty long pile. And a lot of times, these loads would come in when I wasn't there, and they'd just stack them, and I would send them a check. Also, on the other end, you'd sell lumber. People drive in a yard, oftentimes, and this is a yard that's fenced, it's locked, and it's got signage in regard to no trespassing. But at times, people would come, maybe during the noon hour when you didn't lock up, and they'd have kids with them. We'd find kids crawling on the log piles. Well, I've seen those log piles come down and just literally scatter, and they're dangerous, very dangerous. And if I was there, I was very cautious about telling people to stay away from the log pile. Idea being, something like this would be difficult to determine, you know, the liability there. But as I read this amendment, I would urge you to defeat it because I think in a situation like that, it would be quite a lot of liability on someone in the position that I've just described.
Sheriff, Senator Geis.
I'd ask you to oppose this bill, too. Back when I first come down here, what people would call this is gutting the bill. And so I'd urge you to vote no on this amendment.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can understand the rattlesnakes and the ditches and all of that part, and that's we should exercise care there. But we think about some of these places out there that are massive in Wyoming. The senator from over in Bates Creek, he has a big place. So we're visiting his neighbor one day, and they said, that's the good senator's place over there. And so some of these places are so big. How would we actually exercise reasonable care on mass expansions of land? How could we take care of everything possible? And then ultimately, members of the Senate, isn't a trespasser still a trespasser despite what we do?
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Vice President. And if you look at this amendment as it stands and it reads, if this was new law or something, then everything I've heard, it makes sense. It's a bad idea. But the question I have and why you see my name on that is it's already the law. And that's the problem I have in dealing with this issue. If it's already the law and we're codifying and going with Restatement 2, then this makes sense. If this is case law and it's not what we want to do, then we ought to have something that changes the case law. And that's where I get involved in the issue of the devil's in the details. And so this is something we need to be talking about, why I'm on the amendment. But quite frankly, as a protector of private property rights, I wish there was an amendment that went in and said, the case law on this, we don't like it, we're going to change that so we can set up the situation in the future so it does not happen.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, and I appreciate those last comments. Members of the body, you should have a handout on your desk. I'd like you to refer you to that handout. So let's talk about what's law and what's statute, because there seems to be some confusion here. What House Bill 108 attempts to do is actually codify the law. And when we talk about the law, we're talking about case law. And what 108 does is go in and it codifies in our green books, to put it in statutes, what the Supreme Court has ruled is what your duty is as a landowner to a trespasser. And members of the body, this isn't just open land for agriculture. This is your backyard. This is your front yard we're talking about. So let's talk about the difference between what the law is and what the statutes do. What this amendment contemplates is bringing in a provision 337 and 336 from the second reinstatement. The second reinstate was adopted in 1965, and if you go back prior to that, the first restatement was adopted in 1934. The provisions that this amendment contemplates bringing in have been around for over 80 years in their current fashion. Well, let's talk about case history within the state of Wyoming. And the reason this is a bad idea to codify this, in 80 years that this restatement's been around, our Supreme Court has never used this or never adopted it. And the reason is because they didn't feel compelled that there was a case or a need, that the other ones that we're trying to codify in statutes address all of these issues. So what this effectively does is it puts in statutes now something that has never been used by the Supreme Court of the state of Wyoming. So it will effectively become not only the law of the land, and it significantly increases the liability of landowners. So I would ask you to reject this from the basis that it's not necessarily the law as it exists today, because we've never used this provision in the restatement on numbers 2, of sections 336 and 337. They've never been used in Wyoming. Not to say that they don't exist, but that's a restatement. That's not Wyoming law. The restatement is just a provision that says this is the body of evidence that's been collected. The courts only use that when there's no statutes. If there's no statutes governing, they'll go to the restatement and say, well, what is the preponderance of the common knowledge associated with this? Well, what we're telling the courts now is we're going to adopt it. This puts more restrictions and more duty on you as a homeowner and a landowner that don't currently exist in our green books. You adopt this amendment, this becomes the law of the land. I ask you to resist this amendment.
Mr. Scott, for your second time.
Mr. Vice President, yeas and nays, please.
Okay. Anyone else before the sponsor takes his second time? Thank you. Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Folks, if we could, let's take a look at this amendment, and then let's also take a look at the bill, page 2, lines 18 through 23, because the choice we're faced with is between this amendment and the bill is written on lines 18 through 23. This amendment uses the word reasonable care, reason to know, reason to believe, reasonable care. What that means in legalese is somebody gets injured, you're going to a jury. Okay? And the standard will be, did you have reason to know? Did you exercise reasonable care? The existing law in Wyoming is codified on page 2, for adults, page 2, lines 18 through 23 of the bill, which says, except as provided in 3419203, that is the child exception, an owner of land owes no duty of care to a trespasser and is not liable for any injury to a trespasser, except that the owner owes a duty not to willfully or wanton injure a trespasser. That's the existing law in Wyoming. Case law from the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court in Wyoming has not adopted this. There's a legal encyclopedia, a restatement second that says that is the law. So this is a shift in where the Wyoming Supreme Court is going. I'd just like to give you some ideas as to where we are going if we adopt this amendment. In other states that have, here's a case. A horse rider sued a landowner for injuries he received when he rode his horse into an unmarked barbed wire fence on the landowner's property. The landowner was liable for the trespasser's injuries because she maintained a dangerous artificial condition on her property, well knowing or having reason to know that trespassers might enter the property and not discover the condition. Explaining that the reason to know standard was properly applied, the court rejected the landowner's contention that the exception was inapplicable because she did not have actual knowledge that the plaintiff would come into contact with the unmarked barbed wire fence. How many unmarked barbed wire fences do we have in Wyoming? How many trespassers do we have in Wyoming? And the cases from other states go on and on. Motorbike ran into a wire across two posts at the farmer's dirt road. Farmer, question is, did he have a duty to mark the cable keeping trespassers out? ATV ridden by somebody comes across a fence that had been erected to keep trespassers out. ATV falls into a gravel pit. A passenger estate sues a farmer who had a pile of tree stumps behind their fence. The car went through the fence and hit the stumps, and the farmer was sued. So the standard we really want in Wyoming in those kind of circumstances, as tragic as they are, is not whether the rancher, the farmer, the property owner had reason to know or reasonably should have warned. The factual question for the jury should be, did the property owner, as to this adult, act willfully and wantonly, the current law? And I'd urge your rejection of the proposed amendment. Thank you.
Anyone else for the sponsor takes the second time? Mr. President.
Thank you. Folks, I submit to you that this has been the law in Wyoming. Now, I look at the handout, and I understand the handout. And what you see in the handout is that no court has been called upon to actually to codify or say that these have been adopted. But if you look through case law, you'll see that these sections are referred to. They've been discussed. They've been used by lawyers for many years, and the fact is they don't create liability, and rarely will a jury ever find liability in this section. The juries understand the differences. So you get when you get a jury instruction, the judge gives the instruction that you have to have the willful and wanton standard. But there are exceptions that the jury gets to look at. Now, let's don't bring in the helicopters. Let's take a look at the amendment on lines 20 through 26. To have liability under this section, you have to know and have reason to know that the presence of a dangerous proximity to the condition, So this isn't something that if you're not there or you're gone or something happens that you have liability. You have to know and see that a trespasser is about ready to embark in a very dangerous area. Second, the condition has to be the nature that has reason to believe the trespasser will not discover it. A reasonable person. So what this means when you go to the bridge issue, we all have bridges out there. And this law, I submit to you, has been available. It's been in form of instructions. It's been offered many years. Has it gone to the Supreme Court? No. Why? Because, frankly, juries don't find liability. You don't find challenges going up there. And bridges, that a reasonable person, when they see a bridge, they know. You got to be careful. When they're in walking and they see logs, reasonable people know that logs will fall down, so you never see liability, and Wyoming juries do understand this, and that's why you don't see liability. Now, the proposition, the statement of the sponsors is that we're going to codify existing law and we're going to protect Wyoming folks. The reason why I use the rattlesnake issue is that this is the type of deal where it's kind of like the trap gun, but it's not a trap gun. You take a gunny sack full of snakes and you throw them, let's take it to the field out. You throw them in your car seat or you put them in your house and you see a trespasser. Now, you, it's your house. You didn't intend for anybody to press or to trespass. And frankly, you didn't intend to hurt anybody. But when you saw the trespasser, you say, hey, that's his problem. He shouldn't be on my property. But what you know is there's a gunny sack of or now let loose rattlesnakes sitting there. And you say, I'm not even going to bother to tell him because, by gosh, he's trespassing. That's not willful one because you didn't create the condition. Now, this is an artificial condition, something you created. You didn't intend for help to hurt him. But you simply said, you know, that's his. It's trespasser beware. The law of Wyman and the law of all of our human behavior has been when you're in that circumstance, even though he's a trespasser, there are times where you have to get up and say, look, I'm either working on this or I do this, and you can't see this. But if you step over that wall, you're going to step in a den of snakes that I threw in there. But if it's obvious, if it's open, if it's a bridge, and if something that you know, there's never going to be a liability, there never has been. And these provisions have been around for years, part of the restatement second. They haven't been hardly utilized. They don't often get utilized. They don't go to the Supreme Court because, frankly, they've never caused a problem. But they do provide adults some obligation under some circumstances to be a good neighbor and say, by the way, here's an artificial condition that I created, and you should know about it even when you see that trespasser. This is not worrying about drunks. Those aren't reasonable people. This isn't saying that if somebody goes on a bridge that you've crossed over and you didn't know, no liability, never happens. But on the other hand, if you see the bridge, you know there's people using your bridge, and you walk in and you see that the bridge is washed out and is about ready to collapse, yeah, you do have to put a sign up there and say, stay off. Might even be one of your family members. They're doing it. By the way, you may not have given permission to your family member, and they're a trespasser too, but you still have the same obligation that you could treat them as trespassers, but they'd have the same liability. Could be a cousin that's trespassing.
Time.
Could be a friend. I urge your support of the bill. Amendment.
Roll call on the amendment.
Anderson, District 2. Anderson, District 28.
No.
Barnard.
No.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
No.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
No.
Coe.
No.
Cooper.
No.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
No.
Driscoll.
No.
Emmerich.
No.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
No.
Johnson. Kinski?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Pappas?
No.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Von Platern?
No.
Wasserberger?
No.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 8 ayes, 22 no.
Second reading amendment number one has failed. We're back on the bill. Any discussion on the bill?
I have another.
Oh, there's one more amendment?
Yeah.
Senator Meyer, if the reading clerk would please read in the amendment.
House Bill 108, second reading amendment number two, page four, line six.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number two. Actually, it's third reading amendment. Second reading amendment number two to House Bill 108. Ask for your favorable consideration. folks, let's kind of think about the discussion we just had. We heard that although this isn't codified, that it still is law, that the courts can look at it in situations where they want to look at it. unless there's a prohibition, as the good the majority floor leader suggested, you can't. It's going to happen one way or the other, even if we put it in the language or not. Because the courts have that option, that opportunity to look at what other districts have been doing, other areas of jurisdictions have been doing, and apply that to the circumstances. And we heard from the good senator from Johnson County about the situations where it had been applied to areas where people had barbed wire fences and what the outcomes of that would be if at some point in time our courts applied that. Simply what this amendment says is that provisions of this section shall not apply to agricultural land or agricultural operations which are dangerous by their nature. Folks, I cannot child-proof my farm and ranch. I can't do it. If I had a crew of five and spent the rest of my life every day doing everything I possibly could do to child-proof, to warn, to mitigate dangerous artificial and other situations on my ranch, there is no way that I could accomplish that. And frankly, if you get into a situation where even if you've done all those things, a court can still find you liable and can still take everything that you have ever worked for your whole life. I just don't think that's something that's fair or equitable or any way you want to put it. A little bit of discussion about what is an agricultural land or operations. Our statutes basically say it's 40 acres and up, or you have to have at least $1,000 of agricultural goods sold. That's what our definition is of agricultural land for taxation purposes. And that's the standard that I think the court would apply on that. That doesn't let your 40-acre ranchettes get off the hook. But if they got 80 acres or 41 acres, and the reason for 40 acres, that's just a natural surveyor's distinction when they survey, because you got 440s and 1160, that's a quarter section. Quarter section is 640 acres, or just shortly thereunder, depending on what part of the township it's in. So we went to 40 acres, so we know that it's over. So, Mr. President, I think this is reasonable, because I don't believe that there's one agriculture producer or operation out there that can take into account all of the different things that we know could be dangerous, that's artificial, that somebody could trespass on it. Because I can't in good conscience say that nobody would ever trespass on my land. There's a possibility. We've got a county road that runs right through it. We've got neighbors. Once in a while, they've got kids. I found out at one time that some kids were fishing in one of the fishing holes. I found out that they were skating on one of our gravel pits in the winter. I didn't know that till several years after. But there was no way for me to really to prevent that. But had something happened when those kids were fishing there or when they were skating on that gravel pit in the winter and fell through, I would have been liable. And it's just, there isn't any way to actually prepare or to mitigate that. There isn't. Not when you got thousands of acres. There just isn't. When you got miles, 35 miles of barbed wire fence, you can't post all of it. It's impossible. So you put agriculture in a very tenuous position if you don't have some way to know that you're not going to wake up someday and somebody's going to sue you for everything you got.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, folks. This bill has been sold to us, whether or not I agree or not, that this is a codification of the restatement second of torts, and now you're going to change that. You're going to change it demonstrably. You're going to change the whole situation with regards to look where it goes in. It goes in on artificial conditions, highly dangerous to children. Now, why does the restatement have such language about children? Because they don't have the capacity to understand and know We do that throughout our statutes with regards to our minors. They don't have the capacity to contract. They don't have the capacity to do a number of things. But if you're going to do this, and you want to pass a bill that supposedly codifies the restatement, you have just changed the whole restatement by passing this amendment. I urge your defeat of the amendment.
Discussion on the amendment. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 2, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
That's failed. Back on the bill. House Bill 108, having been read two separate. Back of the bill. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, reluctantly on and against the bill, Mr. President. Mr. President, this is exactly what we're seeing, and the discussion we've had, I think, is very instructional for all of us in what happens when we take, and we're going to take an entire body of common law that's been developed over since we started statehood. We developed and we understand where it is, and now we're going to take, and the bill, Mr. President, was presented to us as an attempt to codify the existing law. Well, this is the problem we're going to have when we attempt to codify the existing laws. First of all, I don't think we're codifying all of it. And second of all, once we set this up, we'll see it exactly what we just saw a second ago with the other amendment. We're going to start carve-outs. And so pretty soon we're going to have a carve-out. We have a carve-out for exemptions. Well, why not for recreational property? Why not for a homeowner? Why not for, as we go through this, we're going to start a carve-out. And so we set this thing up, and over the next number of years, we'll see a significant number of lists that come in as we start to adjust and provide the carve-outs for this bill. What this bill does is simply say that with children, you have to do something extra, but all that says is your only duty is to not willfully and wantonly injure someone. Is that really wanton on our codification of common law, that our only duty to someone on property is that we won't willfully and wantonly injure them? Even if they don't have a right to be there, we just don't have to willfully and wantonly injure them. If that's the blanket law. That's what this does. It sets up the entire blanket law, and that's what it is. And pretty soon, we'll just see, at the end of the day, why should apartment buildings, should they have a little bit of carve-out in here? Maybe there's something that should be there. Or maybe homeowners, because the kids in the neighborhood like to climb the fence and come in the backyard and jump on the trampoline. Or maybe it's, so off we go, and pretty soon we'll have a mismatch of things that whoever can schedule and get the most votes down here in a special interest group will prevail. And they'll have some special protection under the law that isn't available to anybody else. I ask you to think hard and vote against this bill.
House Bill 108, having been read two separate times. Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, on and for the bill, and try to provide some more information. Don't be distracted as to what we're doing here. The reason we're doing this is because there's a restatement third out there. I handed out a little sheet for you yesterday, if you remember this or if you have it in your package. The reason all the states, there's now 20-some states, some of them have actually preempted this and already done this. There have been 17 states in the last 3 or 4 years that are doing exactly this. And the reason is because of reinstatement third. So if you don't codify what the practice is today in Wyoming, you run the risk of expanding substantially. And we talked about it the other day. Reinstatement third basically says you're liable for everything that somebody conducts a criminal activity and trespassing on your property. So let's stay focused on what the bill is intended to do. It's the same reason the other 17 states have done exactly what this bill does, is try to freeze in statutes exactly what the legal history has been in the state of Wyoming, so we don't end up reverting to the third restatement.
Any further discussion? House Bill 1. Senator Perkins.
Very, very short. If that's the case, if that's the true purpose, why doesn't the bill simply say that we will not adopt the third restatement? It would have been that simple. But the bill does more than that.
Further discussion. House Bill 108, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 162, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 162, Provider's Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment.
Any amendments, discussions? House Bill 162 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered.
President.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, up to my left, we have a group of women I'd like to introduce to watch the action in the Wyoming Senate. It's the Wyoming Federation of Republican Women. Welcome to the Senate. Please stand and be recognized. Boy, if you cross it, you're in trouble.
House Bill 166, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 166, Electrical Safety and Fire Prevention Amendments.
House Bill 166, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered.
Mr. President.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
My mic is still on.
Well, that's because you're standing up. House Bill 182, second read the bill.
House Bill number 182, Public Assistance Eligibility.
It's a pretty dangerous thing to have when you're sitting next to Coe. House Bill 182, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 205, second reading the bill.
House Bill number 205, Revisor's Bill.
House Bill 205, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 212, second reading the bill.
House Bill number 212, Workers' Compensation Claim Apportionment.
We have an amendment. If the reading clerk, please read it in.
House Bill 212, second reading amendment number 1, to engross copy to corrected copy. Delete the Senate Standing Committee amendment.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 212. Mr. Chairman, this is a simple change. We got a good catch by the guys that catch that kind of stuff. The only change to this, and then we redid the entire amendment, the only change is one word on line 21 at the end of that line was changed to primarily. Before it said it's solely caused by a third party, and that is too high a standard to meet for anyone, so no one could get the revision to their EMR. So now the sentence reads, if the division by a preponderance of the evidence determines that an employer's injury was primarily caused by a third party, the injury shall not be charged to the employer's account. Simple change, really helps the bill. I urge your support.
Discussion on the amendment, Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and for the amendment, folks, this is a good catch by the Vice President. I'll take a little hand in it also, but that's why you have lawyers, folks. You may not like us, but that's what we do. And I think this is a good amendment, but I would also tell you that I think in discussing this further with those that really practice in the law of workers' comp, that we may want to also consider a third reading amendment that makes it very specific that this is strictly for the employer's experience rating and doesn't have any other effect elsewhere, so that all that this deal, that what we're talking about is the employer's experience rating and how that operates, and it doesn't have any transference to what may or may not happen in civil court or whatever else.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I urge the body to adopt this amendment, and I hear my good colleague from Laramie County's concerns. And this is a bill that's typically had a good cause and a good reason to move forward, yet we get involved in the minutiae of law, which is very important, and we need to get it right. So, again, ask the body to adopt this second reading amendment, and we'll work on some language for third reading to try to take care of the concerns from our colleague from Laramie County.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. My only concern, I love the idea of the bill, but my only concern with this amendment was when you get into primarily caused by a third party, and the department just didn't want to play referee, like assign blame to different people. So when you get into something like primarily, you start talking about whose percentage is what. And that bothers me a little bit, and I hope third reading has a little different amendment.
Any further discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of second reading amendment number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? There being no further amendments or discussion, House Bill 212 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 228, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 228, subdivision family exception.
No amendments, no discussion. House Bill 228 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Joint Resolution number one, second reading of the bill.
House Joint Resolution number one, regulation freedom.
No amendments or discussion. House Joint Resolution number one, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Joint Resolution number four, second reading, Mr. Majority, or Mr. Vice President, if you...
House Joint Resolution four, balanced budget amendment resolution.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. I would ask that House Joint Resolution four be laid back.
Okay, House Joint Resolution number four is laid back later today or for Monday?
Mr. President, for Monday.
Okay, it's second reading is postponed until Monday. We're not now at that order of business of bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list? Just give me a moment. Would any of the members of the Senate like any of those bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 45, Health Care Sharing Ministries. House Bill 62, Property Tax Exemptions for Religious Education Camps. House Bill 64, UCC Title I and Title VII Revisions. House Bill 106, Non-Consensual Towing Services. House Bill 121, Article 5, Convention Limitations. House Bill 127, Termination of Employment Wages. If the Chief Clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer. Pappas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
Wasserberger,
aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 aye. House Bill 45, are there any changes? Case, Ida No. Von Fladen, Ida No. Rothfuss, Ida No. Kraft, Ida No. Esquivel, Ida No. Emmerich, Ida No. Wasserberger, Ida No. Johnson, Ida No. Hastert, Ida No. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 21 aye, 9 no. House Bill 62, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Rothfuss, aye to no. Wasserberger, aye to no. Johnson, aye to no. I'm sorry. Von Fladen, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Emmerich, aye to no. Esquivel, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 62, 22 aye, 8 no. House Bill 64, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 64, 30 aye. House Bill 106, are there any changes? Burns, I Bebout, I don't know. Case, I don't know. Wasserberger, I don't know. Christensen, I don't know. Dockstetter, I don't know. Perkins, I don't know. Driscoll, I don't know. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 106, 22 aye, 8 no. House Bill 121, are there any changes? Burns, aye to no. Dockstetter, aye to no. Von Fladen, aye to no. Christensen, aye to no. Anderson, 28, aye to no. Anderson, 02, aye to no. Emmerich, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Barnard, aye to no. Esquivel, aye to no. Rothfuss, aye to no. Kraft, aye to no. Hastert, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 121, 17 aye, 13 no. House Bill 127, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 127, 30 aye.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, House Bills 45, 62, 64, 106, 121, and 127 have passed the Senate. Is that it? Do you have any other third readings? Is that done? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you,
Mr.
President. You
have a motion with respect to the veto override.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, I bring to your attention Article 4, Section 8. I'll read the first part of it. Approval or veto of legislation by governor, passage over veto. Every bill which has passed the legislature shall, before it becomes a law, be presented to the governor. If he approve, he shall sign it, but if not, he shall return it with his objections to the House in which it originated. which shall enter the objections at large upon the journal and proceed to reconsider it. Mr. President, it's pretty clear by our Constitution, we do know that the governor has chosen to veto Senate Enrolled Act 1, which is former Senate File 14. And Mr. President, consistent with the Constitution, and I would move that the Senate override the governor's veto. Mr. President, just a little discussion about this, and members of the Senate, I do not take this type of a vote lightly. It's a very, very important vote. And having been involved in this discussion years ago and a very, very significant veto, you have to take this and look at it and make your own personal decisions. I want to talk a little bit about the rationale behind what the governor said and some of the reasoning. And if you look at his veto message, and you all have a copy of it, Mr. President, one of the most important parts of it in his view is that taking the profit out of illegal drugs. Certainly a worthwhile reason to do this and something that he has strong feelings about. And he goes on to say that we in Wyoming recognize in some states civil forfeiture has been abused. And the whole point of his veto message is that it has not been abused. And if you look at the Attorney General's opinion that was sent to us on February 24th, there's four or five significant parts about it that I think we should once again discuss. One is that it would substantially limit one of the important tools available to the fight drug traffic under the Wyoming Controlled Substances Act. And, Mr. President, the whole purpose of Senate File 14 was to, in fact, put some responsibleness into personal rights and freedom, and the purpose of the bill was to say you had to be convicted before they could, in fact, remove or take away your assets, the asset forfeiture. The second thing that he talks about is the bill will allow forfeiture of property only if the person from whom it was seized be convicted of a felony. I just mentioned that. And the whole point of the discussion on this is that there will be some cases, we all know the debate, we've all had it about where, in fact, you cannot really determine who's the owner of that property, and therefore the sizable amount of money is left to leave the state and go on for other reasons which it was intended to help us with. If you go to the second page of the Attorney General's opinion, Mr. President, it starts with a felony conviction requirement will also prevent forfeiture of personal property that is clearly intended for use in the drug trade. There again, the rationale from the governor and the attorney general is that if in fact you cannot determine who may own that money, who does own that money, therefore you'll not be able to get the conviction, should we take that money or not take that money. Mr. President, the next part about it is you look towards the bottom of that page. The Enrolled Act introduces uncertainty into a forfeiture process that is working well. Well, Mr. President, I would submit to you that it's not working well, or we would not have had the bill. And you can certainly argue one way or the other, but the testimony we heard, the debate on this floor, clearly indicated that the process is not working well. And, Mr. President, the last part of this that I would like to bring to everyone's attention is the concern that you'd have 23 different elected officials making decisions. There will be inconsistencies in that. I would argue that we have elected prosecutors, county attorneys in our counties. They're elected. They're held accountable to their constituencies, elected them. They will make the right decision. Mr. President, having said all that, what I think is very important on this particular issue, and if you're going to override the governor's veto, it has to be about an issue or a bill or something that you are very, very, feel very, very strongly about and take that position. And clearly we are the legislative branch of government, and nobody supports that or believes in that any more than I do. And if, in fact, we have strong feelings about an issue, we should step up, not even worry about the political consequences and override the governor. However, in this particular case, Mr. President, I just want you all to think about, is this the issue and is this the bill that you want to exercise that responsibility and make that very tough and difficult vote? And I want you all to consider that when you make your vote on this one. Can this bill be fixed? Absolutely. That's the whole point of this thing. And yet here we are today trying to make a decision, make a very important vote, whether or not we override our governor on this particular issue. So, Mr. President, I've tried to lay out the facts to you. I think nobody feels strongly, I'll say it once again, more about the legislative branch of government than I do. We're elected to come down here and represent our constituency, work our tails off. We do that and make the best decisions we can. On this one, Mr. President, I just look to each of you to make your own personal decision. And what your vote is your vote, and that's your responsibility to the constituency that you represent. And with that, Mr. President, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
You've heard the motion. The motion is to override the veto on Senate Enrolled Act number 1, which is the original Senate file number 14. That vote requires 2/3 vote to override the veto. Is there any discussion on the override? Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, Senate File 14 is about property rights. It's about the seizure of personal property. Today, we have a civil process with no clear standard. The judges interpret. Senate File 14 is about due process and a clear standard of conviction. Today, a seed or a scrap of marijuana, suspicious behavior, nervousness, etc., that, by the documents we've seen, has been presented as suspicious behavior or that civil standard. Today, the state can take your cash, your car, etc. It's easy in these conversations to look at those other people. But I'd suggest that when we pass these laws, we address these issues, we need to remember it's not just the other people. It may be an out-of-stater that's traveling through. It might be a resident of the state. It might be somebody from your community. It might be your neighbor. It might be your neighbor's child. Our U.S. Attorney General recently said no to these type of seizures and that there needs to be a criminal standard. A congressional bipartisan committee has said there needs to be a criminal standard. Senate File 14, we had input from the banking industry. They said the language in this bill helps clarify and protect the third-party owners. Without a clear legal standard, it is very difficult to win a fight with the state for your own property.
Discussion on the override. Any further discussion on the override? Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, would urge you to use some caution here about is this the fight that you really want to have? Folks, when I came down here this session, this wasn't on my radar. I think the only one that had any radar on this was the Senate and the House Judiciary Committee. Having been through a number of different overrides in my tenure, I suggest to you that this is not the last chance that we will have to debate and to fix a bill. I can go back and look, and I can look at the open container law that took me 10 years to finally get passed, and still my friends hate me for it. But I can assure you that at the end of the day, that bill was far better after 10 years of work than it was when it first started. It's not the last time that we're going to see this bill. We will see it again, and I can assure you it'll come back better. It will come back better with all of the concerns written into it at that time. I urge you to seriously consider whether or not you wish to override this.
Further discussion. Senator Case.
Article 1, Section 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. No warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause, supported by affidavit, particularly describing the place to be searched or the person or thing to be seized. Section 6, due process of law. No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Section 7, no absolute arbitrary power. Absolute arbitrary power over the lives, liberty, and property a freeman exists nowhere in the republic, not even the largest majority. We're all professionals down here, Mr. President. We work hard. We vote them up, vote them down like we see them, and we get along the next day. I respect very much the executive of the state of Wyoming, but we have to call it like we see it. That's why we're elected.
No further discussion. The question has been called for. If the chief clerk would call the roll, this requires a two-thirds vote. An aye vote is a vote to override.
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstetter?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
No.
Escobel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert? Hicks?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Pappas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
No.
Wasserberger?
No.
President Nicholas?
No.
Bebout, aye to no. Barnard, aye to no.
Anderson, 28, aye to no.
Kinski, aye to no. Hicks, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 7 aye, 23 no.
By your vote, the motion to override the veto on Senate file number 14, being original Senate Act number 1, has failed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business of bills on general file. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion's been adopted. Senator Von Platern.
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 65. Would the clerk please read it in?
House Bill number 65, State Employees Group Insurance County Employees, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee. It was referred to Committee number 2. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, and Wasserberger. No, Senators Perkins and Ross. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Ross, or who's taking? That's right, Senator, we can take the day off. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 65, State Employees Group insurance county employees. There are no amendments to the bill. Would yield to Senator Hastert.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate. I give you House Bill 65 and ask for your favorable consideration. The bill before you today is a very simple bill. It provides counties, all of our counties, with an option that can consider when it comes to determining if and how they provide health coverage to their employees. This is the same authority that the legislature granted to the 17,000 employees of the school district back in 2010 and to the employees of BOCES in 2014. Wyoming's 23 counties are in a very different position when it comes to health care coverage. Some are strong and doing just fine. Others are in rough shape and eat up a huge percentage of their discretionary budgets. The association that represents county commissioners sought information from the counties about their interest in joining a state health pool, and about 10 of them indicate at least some interest. If all 10 of those counties joined, it would be roughly 1,200 employees. There are a number of factors that contribute to the very high cost of health care for the counties. First and foremost, most of these counties are self-insured, and these are small pools of employees are participating in these programs and have just a couple of catastrophic claims. It is not uncommon to see premiums spike and fall in response to these types of events. Compounding the issue is there simply aren't enough private providers in the state for effective competition. Some counties have sought bids only to receive no response whatsoever. For some of the smaller counties in particular, the ability to join the state health pool will provide certainty and stability to this very expensive line item in their budget. One county testified in committee that health care for its employees gobbles up a full third of their discretionary budget. But even for other counties, joining the state pool gives one more option to consider at budgeting time to help save money, which is something we should be helping our counties do. I want to remind the members that the school districts already have this authority, as do BOCES. The only school district to join so far was one located in a centrally populated part of the state, and doing so saved that district a great deal of money. In addition, from the department shows that per employee costs for school district were less than per employee costs for the state in 4 of the 5 years. It is expected as each group rises and falls based on health events. I want to remind everyone that while counties currently use private third-party administrators for the plans, the state also uses a private TPA. This isn't a shift from private companies to a public one. Some have argued that allowing counties to join is just a move towards single-payer health insurance in Wyoming, and that if we remove counties from the possible pool of clients, that it'll be very difficult for private and providers. I believe that's a bit of an exaggeration for two reasons. First, the counties are the political arm of the state. They have no authority other than the Constitution and the legislature provides them. They do not have home rule. The nexus of the state is stronger than the school districts, and it makes perfect sense to include them without fear of doing so will mean that we all of a sudden will lose our minds and open the floodgates. Second, it just look at the numbers. Even if all 23 counties join tomorrow, something that is highly unlikely, the total county employee is around 4,200 people. Total non-farm private sector employment in Wyoming is over 306,000 people. In 5 years, private employment increased by over 7,500 people. We simply are not in a position of dramatically reducing the pool of potential clients out there. And then, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, just a quick overview of the bill. Pages 1 through 6 of the bill inserts county and participating county into 93201 and 93203 to establish eligibility and to require that counties follow the same rules as other entities the legislature has allowed into the program. Specifically, on pages 4 and 5 of the bill requires that if a county were to join the state health pool, it must join for 5 years. At the end of the 5 years, a county can rejoin for 5 years, but if it chooses to leave, it cannot rejoin for an additional 5 years. The purpose of this section is to protect the state plan from any potential large claims that may arise in the early years and to allow sufficient time for premiums to help cover the claims. In other words, counties can't join when they have a crisis and then leave when the crisis is averted. The bottom of page 7, starting at line 16 and extends to page 8, lines 12, is further protection for the state plan. It establishes that counties will pay a monthly premium established by the department and that counties must be all in or all out of the plan. And if an employee opts out of the coverage and does not have comparable group coverage through a spouse or other source, the county still must pay the premium for the employees. Both of these protect the state plan, and both have been agreed to by the counties. Finally, on pages 8 through 10, amend the powers of the county commissioners to follow this for election. Members of the Senate, that's the bill. We're simply allowing the counties to do what we've allowed other entities to do, and I will ask for your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Senator Hastert. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, just for clarification, and the presenter may have seen it, but does this just cover all county employees or just full-time employees or full-time employees and part-time employees, and then those sometimes the counties hire seasonal employees? So just some clarification on that.
Anyone like to take questions or speak on the bill? Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, my best answer, and I can make sure that's correct later, but I would say that any employee that the county deems is eligible for insurance would be the ones covered.
Thank you. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and I will confess I'm two minds on this bill, and I've got several questions trying to make up my mind. The figures I've got are out of date. They're pre-ACA. We had testimony in Committee 10 back in 2009 that would have shown the state employee adults and actually the state employee children were significantly more expensive than was the true for comparable populations in our largest private insurer, and at that time looked like the reason in part was the state had reduced the, particularly the co-payments, well below what private insurance charged, and so there wasn't as much motivation for cost control on the part of the patient. And there were also, I think, at that time, some problems with the management of the state plan. Now, lots changed since then. Private insurance has been subject to the ACA. That's run its cost up a lot. The state plan is still a very rich plan. So my questions are, has there been an escalation in the private insurance costs for the counties because of the ACA? I think the answer is in part yes, but I don't have a quantitative feel for that, Mr. Chairman. Are the deductibles and co-payments that will be charged to the county employees once they come in the state plan significantly less than what the counties are now charging, because that will increase the total cost. Trying to get a fix on what this is going to do to us, what are the possibilities for adverse selection here for the state plan? Mr. Chairman, those are the questions I've got as I'm trying to decide on this particular bill.
Would anybody like to answer or speak further on the bill?
Senator Bebout,
Majority. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A little bit about that subject is that you may recall about 3 to 4 years ago where we opted to allow all the school districts into the program. And as I remember, there may be 14,000 employees in the school district, but only one school district has decided to come in, and that's in the center part of the state. And that particular school district has, I think, about 2,000 employees. And so what I've requested of the department is to see the impact of that to our group health insurance plan. And I will submit to you that the information we gathered is very hard to be totally specific, but what it does show us that the first 2 or 3 years there was no impact, which makes sense. When someone rolled into a new program, you don't see the impact. But the most recent year, what has happened to our insurance plan is even though our group insurance plan rates are much lower than a lot in the private sector, that more money, more claims were made by that particular school district than the premiums covered.
Further discussion on the bill, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, and I think maybe the reason you got that particular school district was they knew their population was aging and could foresee the troubles in the future. And that is a little bit of a fear here that you're going to get an adverse selection. But I'm also interested in what does it do to the out-of-pocket expenses of the county employees and what kind of costs is that going to result in?
Further discussion, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would call the good senator from Petrona County's attention to page 4, line 5. And in this area here, and this has to do with the board and now the county or the district, says to participate in the state group insurance plan under this subsection is irrevocable for a period of 5 years. And the reason the irrevocable period for 5 years is to address the adverse selection that might occur, that if a district or a county has what we would consider some high-cost medical bills that are going to occur on certain individuals, then that is spread across 5 years and allows the state plan to recoup that over that five-year period and move that into the whole rate over that. So you get a blending of the costs over an averaging of the cost over that 5 years. That's why that's important. That's one of the reasons also why the private industry has a little concern because they don't know whether or not there is a prohibition about whether they can offer similar plans. And I think we're going to have to get into the insurance code and the statutes a little bit and offer them that same kind of flexibility. If it doesn't now exist, but I can't tell you whether it does or doesn't, but that's something we'll have to look into the next interim.
Further discussion on the bill before we bring the amendments. Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, that five-year provision will prevent one kind of adverse selection, and that's what you get when one of these county plans has several individuals that it knows are going to be high cost in the next year or two. They already have their cancer, that sort of thing. And they come in the state, deal with that problem, and then want back out again when they're healthy. But it doesn't deal with the kind of adverse selection that you get when what they know is their population is aging. It's gradually going to get worse in that five-year period because the older we get, the more chance we have something going wrong with us and the more expensive we tend to be. So that's only a partial prevention on the adverse selection problem.
Speaking on the bill, Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just for everyone's information, probably most of you probably realize this, but our state plan is a totally self-contained plan. We don't have any reinsurance program out there. We pay for it all ourselves. It's all within the state money. The premiums generated and the claims paid is all handled by that plan itself. We do, however, hire an independent third party to administer it. So when we have these huge claims, if we have an adverse situation that occurs, we have to absorb that and eat that. And the way we reflect that and make up for it is we raise our premiums, and then, of course, the general fund is there to assist if we need it.
Thank you. Senator Nicholas, President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I want to speak to the issue with respect to the school district and why it's more expensive. We actually had an investigation and diving into it. And what we found is with school districts, again, folks, when you get, once you hit a certain age, you actually leave the school district policy, unless you're in Laramie County, which provides coverage after you retire. But in most instances, once you retire, you're required to go get a supplemental policy, and you're off the district. You have to get your own coverage, even if you retire at whatever age, whether it's 55 or whatever. So most districts do not provide coverage after employee retires. The real cost that we found with respect to school districts is two things. One is that they had a much younger population of young females, which tend to have children. And that's one of the most expensive components to your insurance policy. And the rate of deliveries among school districts for young teachers is actually higher than the state population. The second thing we find is that with the teaching profession, they have 3 months off during the summer. And what we find is that when they have that 3 months off, they tend to have a higher rate of elective surgeries. So, for example, if you've got something nagging your knee, and if you're working, well, your mind's a different thing. But if you're nagging, you've got something in your knee or your elbow, and you're very athletic, you have your summers off, that just having the time off tends to have people have a higher utilization rate. Whereas with the general population, people are working there's so much elective surgery that's put off because you're too busy to go out, and you think you'll take care of them tomorrow. So we did find is with respect to school districts, it was an explanation. As we bring in these smaller pools, the state population, the state of Wyoming becomes essentially the reinsurer for the counties. And it does take them off of local private policies, and it will make more expensive for those that are trying to get private coverage who now may use the same brokers, same carriers. And if you take the largest employer in the state, which is the state of Wyoming, and you take all the counties, all the school districts, pretty soon you do get a situation where private insurance may be even more difficult because your pools can never get large enough.
Further discussion on the bill for the committee of the whole. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and the majority floor leader mentioned one of the reasons this move may make sense. That is, the state of Wyoming is entirely self-insured, and the structure of the ACA is such that most, not all, but most of their mandates that run the cost up don't apply to self-insured plans. Those self-insured plans, typically large corporations, they have high-powered lobbyists in Washington, and they were able to get their protection in the ACA that the average citizen did not. So to the extent some of these smaller counties are privately insured, and most of them are not really big enough to be safely self-insured. Some of them may be, but it's not safe with that smaller group. The state offers a potential major cost savings by being out from under the worst of the ACA. So that's a reason maybe to pass this bill.
Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I sort of understand why we took in the school districts a few years ago. I can see that, you know, with the power equalization, we don't call it that, but the fact that the state guarantees the funding of the schools. We tend to do a lot of operational considerations from the schools, from this floor. We've kind of adopted the schools to be part and parcel with state responsibility. That's plain facts. And so I guess I understand that, Mr. Chairman. And I do see that, by and large, probably teachers and, you know, it's a reasonable thing, I suppose. I don't think I supported it and probably wouldn't support it again, but this one, I think, is a little bit different, Mr. Chairman. And I'm wondering why we would do this. And
for one example, just the idea of the option. If we were saying, all right, we will now have all the counties come into the state plan, I could actually understand that better. Because the counties, some would be high cost, some would be low cost, depending on the characteristics of each one. But by and large, it might even out, Mr. Chairman. What we're doing is providing an option. And the thing with an option is you only exercise your option if it's more expensive to go with to maintain your existing plan. And you can save money. So everybody will save money, so they'll come to our plan. Talk about adverse selection. It's a built-in guarantee, Mr. Chairman. And, yes, there possibly would be some administrative savings. I don't argue with that. But the basics of the fact that you're at a fork in the road as a county, you can choose to go with something that's more expensive or not. You'll always come into our plan because if your other plan's more expensive. Of course you will. That will drive up the overall rates for the state of Wyoming. With regards to the ACA provisions, my experience in knowing about the state of Wyoming plan is it's a fairly generous plan. We did some amazing things a few years ago when we were worried about dependent coverage and whether we were driving young people to leave our plan. So we are very generous with dependents in the state of Wyoming plan, more so than many other typical plans around the country. We have a good plan. The benefits are very high. There's no question it would be attractive, and I think it's much more robust than a lot of plans that are out there in the private sector. And so I'm not persuaded by the fact that since we're ACA exempt, we can offer less coverage. I think the fact is we offer more. I think this would be more expensive, and it's a road we shouldn't go down.
Further discussion on the bill before we... Senator Meyer.
Chairman, you know, I don't want to get too far out of the scope of what the bill is. The bill is talking about counties, and we've been talking about school districts here for the past 30 minutes. But just to make it clear is that there was no adverse selection, and everybody running into the state plan with school districts, because there were 17,000 lives there, only 2,000 moved over. So to have an assumption that everybody in the county government is going to run over to the state plan is probably just a little bit far askew of what reality is. The most that we saw was about 1,200 possible, and more likely than not, it'll be much less than that. I talked to the chairman of appropriations. We were trying to figure out how many lives there were in the state plan. I think it's somewhere around 14,000 or 15,000, but somebody might have that direct number. But the simple fact is that the state plan is a good plan. It has normally lower deductibles. It's a totally socialized plan, and when I tell you what that is basically all the premiums go in, and that the high-cost, the low-cost folks are paying more. If you're like 30 and under, you're paying more than you would be in the private sector. So it's good for some people that are higher cost in the higher ages, but it's not as good for the folks in the lower ages, and that's our plan. It's a socialized plan. And that's what counties will have to look at. They'll have to look at their particular mix and their circumstances. But they have to be on there for 5 years. If they renew, they have to be on for another 5 years. So that's 10 years to spread out any adverse selection, and I don't believe the adverse selection is going to be there. But we are sensitive about private industry and insurance industry. And, Mr. Chairman, that leads me right into the Committee of the Whole amendment, and I would last...
Would you like to have it read in?
Have that read in.
Please read it.
House Bill 65, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 10, line 11.
Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 65 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Now, folks, what we do here, because we are sensitive, we wanted to make sure that private industry had an opportunity, the insurance industry had an opportunity, if a county was considering going to the state plan, that they could walk in the door and say, this is what we can do for you. And that's what this amendment does. It essentially says at least 60 days before electing coverage under the State Employees and Officials Group Insurance Plan, the Board of County Commissioners shall publish notice of a request for proposals to provide health insurance plan for county employees. Notice shall be published for 3 consecutive weeks as provided in WS 16203 in a county's official paper and in a paper of statewide circulation. Now, that's a pretty stiff notification one. But we wanted to make sure there was absolutely no excuse for private industry to say they didn't contact us, we didn't know they were going for the state plan. So, because we have heard some testimony that essentially counties have been not getting more than one bid, and they're captive to that one offer on insurance. And that's one of the reasons for this bill, was because if a county has no place to shop and there is no competition, then they need an option. And this is one of the options that we can give them. But we wanted to make sure that private industry had that opportunity. And so this is a notification. And it also says that the proposal shall be evaluated and the acceptance shall be determined based on cost, provider network adequacy, and other appropriate factors identified in the proposal documents. And so everybody's going to know what the state's proposing. Every private insurer out there has an opportunity to go in to put whatever deal they can on the table to get that business, because they're going to know what's out there. That's what the amendment does. Stand for questions. If not, I call for the question.
On the amendment, Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess I kind of feel like I'm rising against the amendment. Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, I did a query to the department on a couple of these issues, and then you look at the cost. You're adding what? About the estimates that I've gotten, about $1,200 to the cost of the counties to advertise for that period of time in local and statewide newspapers. So you're adding an additional cost. You're adding an additional burden. We didn't place these burdens on the other groups that joined in. And then these counties, they're going out for bids already. They're already saying, hey, they're not going to do this without going out for bids. And certainly private insurance has, these other companies have and will have the opportunity to bid on these. So they're already doing that. We're adding an additional cost and an additional time delay, which is, and I think, in my opinion, unnecessary. And it's, a standard that, you know, we're holding them to that we hadn't held the others. So on and against the amendment.
On the amendment, committee of the whole, Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, on and for the amendment. The one of the things that we heard in the as the Joint Appropriations Committee studied this in the interim was one of the things we heard in our meeting in Casper, if I remember right, was that one of the mother county had come in and they had gone out and they were very interested in this particular bill and in seeking this relief in their mind. And one of the things we found out in the meeting was that there was attended by a number of members of private industry, and nobody had known, was aware of the problem that the mother county had, Mr. Chairman. And so I think that this helps. One of the reasons we have is one of the reasons for the bill, the proposed reasons for the bill, is that it enhances the competition, provide them options, whether you think that's good or bad, but others provides options. But what this will do is make sure that there's at least notice so that there can be competition in providing insurance from the private sector to counties. If the purpose of just to simply just have counties come in, then obviously you wouldn't want this. But if the purpose is to provide a backstop for counties who can't obtain comparable or competitive priced private coverage, if that's the idea behind this bill, then this amendment would help to make sure that everyone knows, or that any other competitors out there know. Sometimes, you know, Mr. Chairman, I was a county commissioner at one time, and sometimes all it takes is, you know, you may go down to the local coffee shop and meet somebody. You might have your local insurance agent say, hey, what do you think we can do with respect to our county health insurance? And they can say, boy, I don't know, Drew, I can't do anything with that. And or I don't know what you do. And you come back and say, well, I checked, report back to the county commissioner, I checked, and, man, doesn't appear to be anything we can do. What this will ensure is that the very few private insurers that we have left in the state will have the opportunity to understand that there's now a condition and an opportunity to bid. If they don't bid, that's one thing.
But if they do bid it, it's a competitive bid, then it'll be $1,200 well spent, Mr. Chairman.
Further comment on the Committee of the Whole amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 65, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
House Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 65 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We're on the bill again, unless we want to run Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Second reading, or Committee of the Whole reading number.
We'll read it in.
House Bill 65, Committee of the Whole.
I am ready to go, Mr. Chairman. Would it be read in?
House Bill number 65, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to engross copy, page 1, line 12.
Senator Bebout,
yes.
Yours.
Mr. Chairman, let me slow down a little bit. My mind is ahead of my mouth. That's kind of interesting, too, isn't it, Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to House Bill 65. Ask for its favorable consideration. Members of the Senate, there's been some great debate on this bill and for all kinds of reasons. And what this amendment does, Mr. Chairman, is the concern I have and the concern I've had all along on this particular bill is the impact it would have to our overall plan. And if you look at the potential numbers that could come into our plan and understand, members of the Senate, this is a self-contained plan. And when those premiums go up, the state of Wyoming through the general fund is responsible for offsetting those. It only makes good sense from a business perspective, and if we're here to set public policy and to act as a board of directors, if you will, we need to understand the actuarial impact some of these situations may have on our plan. And Mr. Chairman, that's what this amendment does. If you look at the amendment, it requires the department shall conduct an independent actuarial analysis to determine the risk profile and potential financial impact to the plan from the expanded coverage. And then, Mr. Chairman, it goes on to say if that analysis shows that it could impact it, it shall be reported to the Joint Appropriations Committee, but the governor has approved the election in writing. So he still has that option. And, Mr. Chairman, the reason for that is if, in fact, we're not in session, the JAC hasn't had a chance to review it, several counties come in, the actuarial impact is zero, then the governor will go ahead and allow that to happen. That's what the amendment does, Mr. Chairman. I'll be glad to answer any questions and ask for your consideration.
Further discussion, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, actuarial analyses, I believe, are fairly expensive. What's going to be, first question, what's going to be the cost of this amendment? Second question is, as I look at the handout that's come out that shows how many employees there are in these. When you get down under 200 or even under 100 employees, is the actuarial analysis going to be very reliable statistically? Do you really mean an actuarial analysis, or do you want to have, and I don't know what capabilities your third-party administrator has, but if they're in the insurance business, they may well be able to do some medical underwriting and make some predictions as to the cost that would be short of the actuarial analysis. Is that a possibility? So I throw all those questions out on this amendment.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I'm going to rise against this, and I can answer this. Some of the tall senator's questions that he had, like, what's the cost? And I specifically asked EGI to weigh, the department to weigh in on this amendment. And the cost is estimated between $6,000 to $12,000 is the cost to the state for this actuarial process. And EGI has 120 days to get a group enrolled, and the proposed amendment could slow that process and potentially stop them from enrolling. The cost to the state, the reporting to JAC, I'm unclear to the, and maybe this is a question to the bringer of the amendment, you know, the report to the JAC, would that require JAC approval? Would that delay? I'm not sure on 100% on that. When speaking about adverse impacts, we're going to use Natrona County again as an example. No group has consistent utilization. During the 4 years Natrona has been on board, 3 of the 4 years has had positive impact to the state plan. And 2014 had a negative impact due to the size of the state program. But even with the size of Natrota, the impact on the rates had been minimal. And with a group of 17,000 plus employees, retirees, and 200 county employees group, it would represent about 1% of the total enrollment. So impact on that would be minimal. And then you talk about the hurts and delays, the ability for counties to come in unless they have lower utilization at the point, at the time of the state. I'm going to use Carbon County as an example here on this consideration. Right now, their claim utilization is higher than the state's and would have an adverse effect, financial impact on the plan, at least initially. But does that mean over the five-year period it'll be an adverse effect? The chances are to know. So there's, I think, a lot of issues, and I think the biggest issue is the cost to the state. The department has estimated $6,000 to $12,000 cost to the state for this amendment. I rise in opposition.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see where the sponsors are going with this. I agree with the tall senator from Casper that or Natrona County that there might be some things that are done in house that could possibly well be done for less than the $12,000 or $8,000, but $12,000 or $8,000 in itself, Mr. Chairman, I don't think is prohibitive. I'm not sure if it's entirely necessary because if you spread it out over 5 years, you do a renewal over 10 years, actuarially everything's going to blend together, and I don't think there's going to be a problem. I really don't think there's going to be much of a delay because all of these things are just going to have to move forward in the whole process before the county's insurance comes up, and they'll just have to get started. It's a little bit of a planning thing. I think, Mr. Chairman, that the title's open enough, though, that we could also add BOCES and school districts in this, because that's a bigger potential as far as the school districts in the future. And so perhaps you could look at it on third reading and see whether it needs to go there. But I think with a little bit of cleanup and a little bit of wordsmithing, if the tall senator from Casper would work with the sponsors, I think you guys would probably have it done.
Senator Scott on the Committee of the Whole Amendment, too.
Mr. Chairman, just one question. If the cost of the whole amendment is $6,000 to $12,000, that's a reasonable cost. If the cost is $6,000 to $12,000 per county, then you're starting to talk maybe as much as $200,000 or a little more, and that's not reasonable. So my question is, which is it?
Anyone else like to speak on Committee of the Whole Amendment? Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Rising on and for the amendment, I support the amendment because I see this as being very critical to the bill itself and people feeling comfortable, the state, the counties, everybody, that in supporting this bill, that the state's not going to get stuck with a pig and a poke, that the state has every right and obligation to know what it's getting into. And the counties or any insured is going to want to go into these things with their eyes wide open. The actuarial studies, my experience has been that they don't run that many dollars. Most of the work in these studies is the same work that you've got to put into bidding out your insurance to begin with. You have to gather all the information about the age and gender of your employees. You've got to get all your claims experience put together. You've got to get that put into a spreadsheet in a standardized format. And now, when I had my own business, I just kind of swagged that with my insurance agents. But, at the city, we did hire somebody to comb through that data and tell us what they thought they might be able to do in terms of configuration of our bid when we put it out. The cost of that, if we have 10 of 23 counties, the bad news on that is people are worried that it's adverse selection or coming to the risk. The good news is all 10 that are acutely interested get together and share the cost on this thing. The cost per each should not be that bad, but it will also help folks feel comfortable that what they get in the end is not just somebody shifting all their costs upstairs to the state, but that these groups are in fact small enough or large enough that we can spread that cost reasonably over the entire population. On and for the amendment, Mr.
Chairman. Hole number two amendment, Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, to the tall senator's question, it is 6 to 12 per county.
Any further discussion on committee of the whole two? If not, those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion to adopt committee of the whole number two to Senate, House Bill 65, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
Chairs in doubt, all those in favor, please stand. Committee of the whole number two to House Bill 65. All those opposed, please stand. The chair is out of practice. Committee of the whole, number two to House Bill 65, passed committee of the whole. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on House Bill 65, Senator Hastert? 64, excuse me. 65. House Bill 65.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate. I just add, just rise in support of the bill. You know, at the end of the day, we ask that and we expect that our local governments, you know, are fiscally responsible. We've in JAC, we've talked about that. We've had these conversations for years about being fiscally responsible. This gives them an opportunity, an option to do that. If they don't have an opportunity or an option out there for the health and for the costly health insurance, and they don't have any other options out there, then it is costing us, all of us, it's costing taxpayers' dollars, whether it's to what comes into us or what we hand out, it's costing taxpayers' dollars, and this is that the wisest use of taxpayers' dollars? I believe that giving them this option, as we've given school districts and other entities this option, is wise and is definitely fiscally responsible, and I believe that we should pass this.
Any further discussion, Senator Perkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No further discussion, actually, but just to advise or to make a disclosure, because of my past affiliation and represent as being a county commissioner, I actually am insured through my county health plan, so I don't think that's a conflict because. It obviously affected anybody who's insured under county health plan, but I didn't want to disclose that that I am insured under the county health plan. But I do not think it's a conflict under our rules, and I will be voting.
Thank you, Senator Perkins. Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Okay. Quickly, Mr. Chairman, I've stood at this microphone on multiple occasions during this session, trying to present the plight of some of these hardship counties. You all have the sheet. You know what the interest level is on the part of the counties that you represent. I would simply say I just renew that plea on the part of the hardship counties to be recognized in some manner, and we've made other proposals. I would simply say this is another means of putting forth a lifeline to some of those counties that are struggling, and I would then urge your favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other discussion, Senator Bebout?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and very briefly, members of the Senate, the last two amendments, I think, have gone a long ways to making this bill more palatable and to protecting the overall interests of the state. And as my colleague from Glen Rock discussed, there are counties out there that truly have some issues, and I understand that. And all I'm saying is just be cautious, members of the Senate, because, you know, we have cities and towns and county or cities and towns out there that have similar situations, but they have worked out a way to have their own insurance. Let's just be cautious as we move forward. It's not so much two or three or four or five counties initially, but if this thing continues to grow, where do we say no? And who do we say no to once we get started? And are we going to have a whole additional number of people involved in the plan? And quite frankly, can we afford it? So just be cautious as we move forward, members of the Senate.
Any further discussion on House Bill 65? Seeing none. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 65, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
House Bill 65 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senator Rothfuss.
The privilege of the floor.
Absolutely.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to introduce some guests that we have above you in the balcony. The University of Wyoming singing statesman under conductor Nicole Lamartine. I was hoping this whole time that they would actually break into spontaneous song during the last debate about county commissioner health insurance and other entities, but that didn't happen. Nonetheless, I hope we can welcome them to the Senate.
Welcome to the Senate.
Mr. Chairman, before that, one more, and I believe we should have an encore, but I would like to hope that as the Senate, on all future introductions, we can accept this as the new bar. One more!
Thank you. On behalf of the Senate, thank you very much for, and the interlude would have been appreciated during the last debate. But Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate beg leave to ride and sit again to 145.
Okay, you heard the motion. 145. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate's recessed to 145.
No.
No, sorry. Committee hold is recessed.
You're fine. No, you're fine. Or do we have any other messages, any other business? Signing of rolled acts. I'm fine. Senate Rolled Act number 40. Could use my readers, though.
Senate Enrolled Act number 40, being original Senate File 93, an act relating to gasoline taxes.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 40, being original Senate File 93. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 38. Thank you.
Senate Enrolled Act number 38, being original Senate File 73, an act relating to forcible entry and detainer actions.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 38, being original Senate File 73. I so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 39.
Senate Enrolled Act number 39, being original Senate File 75, an act relating to child support.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 39, being original Senate File number 75. I so signed. Any further announcements? Are there any announcements? Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your travel committee number 6 will meet on Monday morning at 8 a.m. in room S14 to conduct the following hearings for the governor's appointment. Patrick Crank as a member of the Game and Fish Commission and David Rail as a member of the Game and Fish Commission.
Ask him about my brother Bobby's brother-in-law.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 3 will meet at 1:30 today up in S16 before we go over and meet with the House Revenue Committee to discuss interim topics. We'll have about 15 minutes, so we'll make it short and sweet.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, and Water Resources. I'm on the agenda. We're going to call all them people you told us to call.
Good for you. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Appropriations Committee will meet immediately upon recess, and then we'll grab some lunch afterwards or whatever, but to consider the last re-referral, House Bill 235, Foreign Business Entities Reinstatement, re-referral.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet Monday upon the noon recess in H1 to consider interim topics with the Joint Judiciary of the House.
Senator Von Fladern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet about 12:20 in room S18. We're going to discuss interim topics as a group ourselves, and then we'll do Environmental Quality Council interviews with Nicholas Agopian and Aaron Clark, followed by Business Council Board of Directors Ron Harvey and Alan Hoops, I mispronounced.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, just a reminder, Conference Committee on Message Number 344, Senate File 12, Trespassing to Collect Data, will be meeting at 1 o'clock in S1.
Any further messages? Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Joint Corporations Committee will meet at right after the noon recess on Monday to discuss interim topics. I believe we'll take it up at 12:30. And then upon final adjournment, Your Select Committee on Tribal Relations will also meet to discuss interim issues on Monday.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That's been adopted. The Senate shall stand in recess until 1:45.